Welcome to Measure Matters, the podcast where we dive deep into the world of metrology and calibration. I'm your host, Aaron Rayner, Director of Marketing for Mentzer. In today's episode, we brought back the man, Philip Romero, Mentzer's esteemed metrologist. Now, we're going to be diving into the critical topic of analyzing the probability of false acceptance risk in relation to the 4:1 test uncertainty ratio. I know it's a lot, but this is used in calibration processes, so it is important. So join us as we unravel the complexities of measurement risk and its impact on calibration and accuracy.
You're listening to Measure Matters, a podcast by Mentzer.
Philip, welcome aboard again.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So, last time you were here, probably in one of the earlier episodes of Measure Matters last year. So we've got everything refined for you. We've got a better table. We've got matching mics.
Awesome.
We just want to make sure that you feel perfectly at ease as I crush you with these expose questions in regards to uncertainty. Let me have them. Yeah. So we're talking about the 4:1 uncertainty. So give us just kind of a broad sweeping explanation of what we're talking about.
Really just that the standard to use to calibrate a device, the accuracy is four times less than the device you're calibrating. Mm-hmm. So like for an O1 device, you'd want it to be 0.025%.
Ah, okay. So I've already started to pick apart why that may not be good or it may be good. Okay. I've certainly got some questions for you. But okay. So in terms of just metrology in general, just give us a recap of why those type of standards are important.
It helps you know that your calibrations are legitimate. I mean, because you could perform a calibration and all calibrations have measurement uncertainty, but if you really need to know that the calibration you perform is a legitimate one and your results are good, then you want to have this, 4:1 test uncertainty ratio or higher, just depending on your needs.
Okay, perfect. So then I'm going to back up a little bit just for our audience that may or may not be, versed in this particular subject and ask you to talk to us a little bit about the 4:1 uncertainty ratio and its implications, specifically its limitations when analyzing risk mitigation strategies.
Okay, so the way we're trying to actually move away from the 4:1 test uncertainty ratio, mm-hmm. it's still like the golden rule. If you have a 4:1 test uncertainty ratio, then your calibration is pretty good. But now we're actually moving more, or have been moving towards what's probability of false accept, and that's really just looking at risk. And there's probability of false accept, and there's probably a false reject. The accept is the consumer risk, reject is the producer risk. Mm-hmm. So when you say false accept, we don't want to ever tell a customer that the device is good when it is actually bad. And so that is the risk we want to minimize. I think the recommendation is you want that probably a false accept to be less than 2%. Mm-hmm. So that by the time you add your measurement uncertainty to the errors that you see in a calibration report, that there's less than a 2% chance that it's out of tolerance.
Okay, so you're talking about the international standard opposed to the 4:1, which is more of a national accepted standard, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so false acceptance, let's talk about that. Here at Mentzer, like you said, we kind of meet the 2% false acceptance requirement for calibration processes. Why wouldn't a company want to say we are 0% of that standard or 0% of false acceptance?
Oh, you could. I was saying you technically could be zero.
Don't say anything wrong here.
You could technically be zero, but really for all intents and purposes, since your measurement uncertainty is never zero, then your risk could never be 0%. Mm-hmm. But really, based off of these statistical calculations, you can calculate that it's less than 2%.
Okay. So, and again, just for the edification of our audience, when we're talking about 2%, so we're talking about like the band of accuracy, correct? And then you're talking about the different uncertainty ratios that happen. Explain that a little bit just to kind of give it a little more background.
Okay, so when we do a calibration here, well, if it's a brand new device, mm-hmm. and most customers may not know this, but we actually do have guard bands in place. And that's just to prevent... once you add our measurement uncertainty that the device is out of tolerance, we don't actually want that, obviously, for a brand new device.
Sure.
So guard banding definitely helps with that. But let's say, we have a guard band of 30%. So for an O1 device, we wouldn't want it to be any worse than 0.03% of the spec at the full scale reading. Mm-hmm. That way, once you add the measurement certainty, that's a low probability that is out of tolerance.
Got it.
So the probability of false accept is less than 2%.
So how does this method... what's the word I'm looking for here? How does that method benefit the customer or the company that we're providing this service or product to?
At the end of the day, it's all about risk. Mm-hmm. I mean, really, that's what the 4-to-1 test and certainty ratio is about. That's the probability of false accept really is about just what is the risk that we tell them that it's good and it's actually bad. And we want to minimize that risk, obviously, for our customers.
Okay. And then how was it before we adopted that standard?
It's still about risk. But if you had a 4-to-1 test and certainty ratio or a 5-to-1 test and certainty ratio, your risk was already low. But with advancements in sensor technology, your test and certainty ratio may be, 3-to-1 mm-hmm. or 2.5-to-1. And if it starts to creep closer to a 1-to-1 test and certainty ratio, then you really need advanced methods for calculating that risk.
So when we had you here last time, one thing that you talked about when it came to precision calibration or measurements was the environments.
Okay.
And the different... elements that can impact an accurate reading. So yes. How does the location of measurement impact the probability of false acceptance?
Typically it's low if we're talking about sensors. Mm-hmm. But if you're moving into deadweight testers, then your gravity will obviously vary by location. And then if you don't account for that, then that can increase your risk for your PFA being out of tolerance.
So with an electronic calibration mm-hmm. machine, like a pressure controller,
yes.
There's less risk there?
Less risk for location, yes.
Mm-hmm. And does that just have to do with the physical world?
Yes, and how the sensor is actually measuring the pressure.
Well, okay, so flesh that out a little bit. Explain that that statement where you have the difference between your digital reader and then your deadweight tester.
So the deadweight tester being a physical artifact, how it operates with you typically having to literally float a mass set on top of an area of the piston,
mm-hmm.
and that is all dependent on gravity. Whereas, and I don't know sensors very well, like maybe Robert Clayton does.
You're just trying to pull him back in.
But our sensors, absolute sensors, will be more sensitive to changes in location just because of changes in altitude will affect an absolute sensor's reading.
Right.
But for, I think, all intents and purposes, the location won't affect the calibration on a electronic device.
Okay. Well, that's interesting, actually. So, and I did have the masses for this, but I didn't want to lug them in here, today's a legs day, so I didn't want to,
Yeah.
So hit the gym with the masses on the deadweight tester.
Right.
So, okay. Well, on one side you have the ISO 17025 international standard. And on the other side you have the Z450.
Z540.
Yes. So yep. Zed, if you're, I'm trying to appeal to our international markets there. So from what
I'm using the Zed word.
Don't say the Zed word. So from what I understand, the Z540 is kind of termed the national standard or the state of the art spec. When you talk about applications like the military.
Yes.
Explain some of the differences between the two in terms of scope and application.
Okay, so ISO 17025 is how a calibration lab should be managed.
Mm-hmm.
It'll mention things like guided expression, measurement uncertainty, GUM, and also Z540. So it'll kind of reference those two documents in regards to how you should be analyzing your measurement uncertainty or how you should be performing your measurement uncertainty calculations.
Okay.
So like one of the things that I've been looking at with ISO 17025 is, what's required for the certificate. So ISO will tell you need the name, you need the location of the lab, you need ambient conditions recorded. It lists all these things. But when it comes to measurement certainty, it's usually referencing an external document rather than having all of that built into 17025.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
So then what are the differences in terms of international and national recognition and adoption? Because I know that the 17025 international, and then you have the 540,
yeah.
Which is just national to us. So
yes.
what are some of the differences between the recognition?
I still think they're very both very powerful documents or standards that we should adhere to.
So then why why are there two?
I don't have an answer to that question.
Dang it, Philip, you're the metrologist here. You are the expert, okay? If I can't count on you for this question, then who am I going to go to? Don't say Robert.
Robert, yeah. Hey, he was my mentor. So, oh, okay. Yeah.
So is there any situations or applications where they require one and not the other, or the other and not the one?
Well, usually for our, military customers, they want us to more adhere to their document, the Z540, than the ISO 17025 standard.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then for the 540.1, Mensur meets that standard, but
yes.
But not 0.3, I believe?
I don't believe so. But okay. But Z540.1, I think, was superseded by .3, but we're still only fitting the .1
okay.
at the present time.
But then on the ISO standard, we are completely
up to date. Yes, the 2017 okay. standard. Yeah.
So, in your opinion, which one is more important or / better? Or is it just different?
They're different. Yeah, you can push on one's that. Better than the other.
I don't want you to like start getting hate mail all of a sudden. You know,
right? I think they're just kind of referencing each other, and one's not necessarily better than the other, but we are accredited to ISO 17025 and Z540.1.
So looping it back to the 4x1 then, mm-hmm. how do those two certifications apply to that, or those standards apply to the 4x1 opposed to the, you know, the 2%?
They're usually not requiring any specific test uncertainty ratio. Just the 4x1 is kind of the old golden rule, mm-hmm. where if you had a 4x1 test uncertainty ratio, then you could be confident in the measurements that you've taken.
So some of the audience or some of the people listening to this may be a little confused on 4x1. Why is this even a conversation? Mm-hmm. And as it was explained to me, and the more research I did, you start to realize that the more accurate a device becomes, mm-hmm. the 4x1 kind of becomes a little unrealistic.
That's
Talk
correct.
About that a little bit.
Yeah, that's correct. Well, even with our CPD 8500s, our test uncertainty ratio is not 4x1.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's closer to maybe 3x1 or 2.9x1 or something like that. So we need to evaluate those measurement results differently to ensure that the calibration is legitimate.
Okay. Essentially. So with our 6050, it has an accuracy of 0.008. Mm-hmm. So if we were to match 4x1 to that, we would have to be 0.002?
Correct, yes.
So give that a little context. How accurate are we talking about there when we say 0.002%?
So for a 100 PSI sensor, uh-huh. our measurement accuracy or the uncertainty in our measurement would typically be less than or equal to 0.002 PSI
okay.
for that 100 PSI gauge.
Okay, so then what do you say? What do you think is the most frequent pressure rating that we go up to? 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 PSI. What would you say is a good, nice, middle-of-the-road pressure rating?
For us, what we would consider low pressure, probably 100 PSI, 200 PSI, somewhere in there. The majority of our ranges are less than the higher pressure, like 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 PSI.
Okay, yeah. So let's take 100 PSI. How accurate could we get to with our product and still meet the 4x1?
Double eight's pretty probably the best, and well, we have the even the 008 IS-33,
mm-hmm.
so that's probably going to be the lower threshold.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean we might be able to improve it slightly, but then we're just increasing the risk, depending on. I mean, and another thing that we often forget is yes, you want your test uncertainty ratio to be, you desire it to be 4x1,
mm-hmm.
but that doesn't account for what if. You know, our mass got dinged and lost a little bit of weight. We're not accounting for that additional error that we could find a year down the road when we recalibrate that mass set.
Okay.
So typically you do want to build in, okay, yes, our standard is 002%, but let's allow 0025% in case anything's off during the calibration cycle, the temperature probe was off, the piston area changed some amount or something like that.
So is moving away from the 4x1, is it really about that cap that realistic cap of what you can meet?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Because if we go back to the ISO standard that we meet, 2% of the accepted reading.
Yes.
There's no upward limit to that. Is that correct? The more, I mean, you could just keep getting more accurate, and as long as you stay within that range,
less than 2%. Yes.
Right.
Yes. Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. Yep. So then, what can you add to the discussion when it talks about, and I'm going to say the statement and no one roast me, what can you add to it when we look at the statement 4I1 is antiquated?
Antiquated in the sense that the sensor technology we have now is much better than the sensor technology we had when that was created, or when that ratio started coming around.
Mm-hmm. So if you had your druthers, you would just be the 2% the whole way, all day long.
I don't like you always trying to make me pick a side.
Yeah, just like I'm boxing you in.
I mean, they have their purpose. For a customer, it may be easy. Hey, if they're looking at, we still have customers that require us to put the test uncertainty ratio on the certificate. Uh-huh. And so for them, that's just probably a quick way to know, okay, these are legitimate test results. I can look at these errors and know that they're, you know, relatively accurate.
Okay. Yeah. So it's still a good process. It's still a good standard.
Yeah. It's something quick and easy for a consumer to look at and say, oh, the test uncertainty ratio was on some of the calibrations for this specific customer. I think the test uncertainty ratio is almost 14 to 1. So if they glance at 14 to 1 and look at their measurement results, don't see any out of tolerance conditions, then, you know, their device is fine.
Okay. So are there instances where other companies or products don't meet the ISO standard but do the 4I1 standard? And they just say, oh, I'm not going to mess with that one, or I don't meet that one.
Well, so we used to be required to list the test uncertainty ratio on our certificates. Mm-hmm. If it was great or less than 4 to 1, we were required to list it on a certificate. Well, after, I think that was in the 2005 ISO 17025 standard. But since then, we've gone away from that. And as long as you're including the measurement uncertainty on the certificate, you don't have to include the test uncertainty ratio.
Oh, perfect.
Because before it was, you had the test uncertainty ratio, no measurement uncertainty on the certificate. You just had your test uncertainty ratio. Well, now that we're required to list the measurement uncertainty, we're not required to have the test uncertainty ratio on there.
Oh, okay. So, but it, unless a customer were to ask for it, then we can certainly provide it.
Absolutely.
Because we meet both standards in that case.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yep. Does that make Mensur unique, or is that just becoming a standard across the board?
It's probably a standard across the board.
Okay.
Yeah. Maybe how we're presenting it may be different from other our competitors.
Okay. So then the way that Mensur is different is just the level of accuracy we can provide.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. While meeting the specifications and the standards.
Right.
Okay. Yes. Perfect. Well, I appreciate it. Mm-hmm. Hey, Philip, I really appreciate you coming back in and kind of fielding those hard-hitting questions that I threw at you, but I knew that you could handle them.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Hey, you can check us out at info.mensur.com/podcast for all of our podcast episodes, and then check us out on social media. Thanks for tuning in.
Subscribe to Measure Matters for the most up-to-date information on all things metrology.